Good Wednesday. Today is January the 14th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, recently, the Ohio Soybean Council had a retirement with Tom Fontana. That left a big hole in the area of research and education, but they found just the person to fill it, a great researcher we're going to meet after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
Joining me today is Taylor Deal, and Taylor is the new director for research at the Ohio Soybean Council. Taylor, first off, congratulations on the new position. If you will, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little background. Folks probably know you and have seen you from some work at Ohio State through Extension and otherwise, but maybe take us down memory lane.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Dusty. And in my background, I've worked a lot in Ohio. I was an extension educator in Western Ohio. I grew up in Dark County on a 1,200-acre row crop farm. My family still farms over there in beautiful Dark County. I also, within my work at Ohio State, I am finishing up my PhD, and I have a large PhD project called Battle for the Belt. And in that, I got to work on planting date, work in both corn and soybeans, and planting date priority with corn versus soybeans, and a lot of communication efforts within my PhD project. And I've gotten to work with a lot of the researchers in soybeans and corn at Ohio State over the past 5 years within Extension and within the university researchers as well.
Now, you also spent a little bit of time out of state, from what I understand.
I did. After I graduated with my master's, I moved down to North Carolina, which was really beautiful and a great experience. I worked in Extension there for 2 years as a row crop agronomist for a few counties around the Charlotte area. And I mostly got to work in corn, soybeans, and wheat there. There was not as much cotton as one might think. When you're from Ohio, you assume a little bit about North Carolina being completely full of cotton. And that is not necessarily true.
Well, tell us, for folks maybe that don't know, a little bit about the position as director for research with the Soybean Council. What all does that encompass?
Part of what the research director does is to ensure that our checkoff dollars go to research that is helpful for our producers on their farm within our soybean breeding lines, and sometimes communication and education for plant research. How do we extend our information to farmers in a better way? And sometimes it's in new products as well. So we get proposals from researchers, and then we help decide where those checkoff dollars go to help benefit our producers.
Now, you have the unique advantage maybe of being on both sides of the fence. You've done research and been a part of soy checkoff funded research projects, and now you're on the administrative side of that. Tell us some advantages you think that brings to your ability to fill this role.
My research background and my background with Extension and working with producers really helps me to understand the needs of the farmer and where our research can be placed to in a way that farmers can receive it and what is actually beneficial for our producers immediately. Some of our research can be helpful within the calendar year that they learn about it. So if we're talking about planting date or herbicide recommendations, that can be immediately useful on your farm come the next planting season. I think it gives me a unique advantage to be able to see research projects that will actually be helpful to our producers in the long run and in the very short term as well.
Absolutely. Well, any specific goals you have, just sort of short term in the next, 6 to 12 months for the position?
Well, the goals I have for the next 6 months are to meet as many producers and our board members as possible. I want to prioritize having relationships with our board and producers so I can better understand the research that we want to do in Ohio, so our farmers can have a voice with us to be able to choose the research that they want to do.
Again, my guest today is Taylor Dill. Taylor is the new director for research with the Ohio Soybean Council. Taylor, thanks so much for your time and best of luck.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at crop.com. coverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now, take a little bit of time, and talk about cooperatives, in particular agricultural cooperatives. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
Member investment is an important pillar of the cooperative business model, as seen in many parts of America, especially rural areas. Yet, as Phil Kinkle of Oklahoma State University Extension points out, there are many examples of what equity and its returns might look like.
In most cooperatives, there is some membership equity. So in order for me to become a member, I make some investment and buy a share of stock, and then that gives me both voting rights and the right to get profits. And then there is structures of revolving equity or proportional equity or equity with associated usage rights. So there's really three different categories there.
Kinkle explains revolving equity and, in turn, how a member may profit from this arrangement.
Most cooperatives use the revolving equity, and so at the end of the year, they pay back their profits, and they pay back that in a combination of cash, which is, of course, your immediate benefit, and then equity. So you build your equity. You build your equity by owning the co-op.
Proportional equity is best exemplified by agricultural cooperatives, such as those in the dairy and cotton sectors.
Those co-ops, they would, it's called a base capital system, and you would have a equity requirement based on the amount of business you're doing. Until you get to that, you get less cash patronage, and then once you build up that you've got the required amount, then now you're fully invested and you would get a higher amount of cash.
The model used by value-added cooperatives, one example is the ethanol industry, is what Kinkle calls proportionate share.
For every bushel of corn I bring to an ethanol co-op, I have to hold one own of stock, one share of stock, and that stock has a usage right. I still get the profits off of that one bushel of corn, but my equity was linked to it. And under that model, that's the only co-op model where the equity does actually buy and trade. And so I can sell my shares and usage right to another farmer if they want to buy that to be able to deliver their corn and get the ethanol profits or also done in other value-added businesses.
And some cooperatives issue preferred stocks to both members and non-members.
Preferred stock usually pays a stated dividend. And then in co-ops, by federal and a lot of times by state laws, we have a limit on dividends of 8%. Some co-ops actually, when we talk about revolving the equity, they revolve it into preferred stocks. We're supposed to be giving most of our returns in proportion to use. And so that's why we put that limit on dividends on the equity, on the preferred stock.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.